The infidels opened the thrice-cursed gate to Jahannam, releasing the Gog and Magog upon those who believe. It seemed that all was lost, and Shaitan would emerge victorious over Dunya. But the creator of the universe came to the aid of the faithful, and, as had been written, the great iron wall of Du-Al-Qarnan manifested itself in the lands ruled by the Sultan of Rum. A call was sent to those who believe righteously, and over the coming decades, the migration of all the faithful, second in importance only to the Hiraj of the Prophet himself, took place across Europe, Asia, and Africa. Millions perished on the road and at sea. For the heretics and their Shaitan lords swarmed them as locusts swarm fields of ripe sesame, devouring them and building vile monuments and statues from their limbs and heads, so they could not be buried, as it is decreed in the holy texts. But once all those who survived the journey had come, the mighty gates of Al-Qarnan were closed, and the great sultanate of the invincible iron wall of the two horns that pierced the sky was formed. The assaults of the slaves of Jahannam against the sultanate have never ceased since that day, and each day new martyrs are mourned as they defend the wall and confront the heretics who have overcome its defenses. But within the walls, the lost knowledge flourishes, and from mosques of white marble and gold muezzin call the faithful to pray for the success of the Sultan's army as it struggles to protect the lands within the wall and defend the caravan trails that provide the Sultanate with vital trade goods. The Iron Wall is the greatest defensive work in the world, a mighty bulwark festooned with the famed artillery of the Sultan. Azeb sharpshooters stand at the ready, ever watchful for surprise attacks. And the elite Janissary regiments have barracks at set intervals near the wall, so they can react to any attack at speed. During a more serious incursion, a full muster of Azebs is called. The House of Wisdom unleashes its terrifying Taquin creations upon the foe. And if the need is desperate, the Sultan himself comes forth, and his Janissaries march with him to do battle, carrying the green flag of the Prophet before them. Thus, the protection of the Iron Wall has had an extensive influence on the Sultanate way of war. The conscripted Azebs are experts at feigned flight and skirmish, while the loping lines of Jabir harass the enemy flanks. All the while, the superb artillery of the Sultan bombards the enemy as they make their torturous journey across the battlefield, littered with traps set by the skilled sappers. When they reach the ranks of the faithful, the Janissaries, Sultan's elite household troops, close in and finish the enemy with their devastating countercharge, led by their iron-willed officers. Dreaded assassins from Alamut prowl in the winds of time, striking the enemy elites and leaders, while the alchemists of the House of Wisdom unleash devastating weapons, made deadly by their elemental mastery, capable of overcoming defenses of virtually any foe. Beyond the Iron Wall, forces of the Sultan operate in small, mobile companies, each with a particular mission to accomplish. They hunt down apostates that have gone to serve Shaitans, look for the relics from the time of the prophets, or seek to recover lost treasures and books of knowledge from the ruins of the fallen caliphates. Though an understanding between the Church and the Sultanate on being co-belligerents against Jahannam exists, the commanders of these expeditions will tolerate no interference and do not hesitate to crush those who would hinder their mission. Resentment against the infidels who unleashed Gog and Magog runs deep in the Sultanate, and matters of honor are swiftly resolved with duels to the death. Woe to those who dare to hinder the mission of those who believe. In the name of Allah, the compassioning, the compassionate, praise be to Allah, the beneficent King, the Creator of the universe, Lord of the three worlds, who set up the firmament without pillars in its stead, and who stretched out the earth even as a bed, and grace and prayer. Blessing be upon our Lord Muhammad, Lord of apostolic men, and upon his family and companion train. Prayer and blessings enduring in grace, which unto the day of doom shall remain. The Janissaries are the Sultanate's elite warriors, raised from childhood in the arts of war. Captured during raids upon the desolate northern and eastern marches beyond the Iron Wall, they are subjected to rigorous martial training and indoctrination from an early age. Through spiritual and alchemical means, bound by chains unseen, their minds are carefully conditioned until they attain a complete and unwavering loyalty to the Sultan and to him alone. Their physical attributes are augmented by potent elixirs created by the mystic Jabirian arts. Their ornate armor is forged from the metallic formula that the alchemagi of the Sultan gleaned from the very iron wall that protects the Sultanate from their enemies. These soldiers are also protected by powerful talismans crafted by the blind thaumaturgists from the school of the Meteoric Omen. Armed with Jizail rifles, hand mortars, Yadagon blades, and a devotion carved upon their very souls, the Janissaries are formidable opponents indeed. On the battlefield, Janissaries excel at storming enemy strong points and trenches, crushing elite formations and acting as the bodyguard for high-ranking individuals. Though the Sultan uses them sparingly beyond the Iron Wall, since they also form his personal bodyguard, some Janissaries are sent to the front line to bolster the cause of the Sublime Gate. In the middle of the mud, blood, and dust of the trenches, their richly decorated panoply of war creates a beautiful and frightening spectacle as they charge the enemy lines. With total conviction that paradise awaits those who fall in righteous battle. In the fabled Sultanate of the Iron Wall, deep beneath the golden gardens of Damascus, through the cavern of the sleeper, and past the seven gates of potentiality, are the vast laboratories and metaphysical factories of the alchemists. Using the mysterious Jaberian process called Taquin, the alchemists are able to create artificial life and produce all manner of strange, wondrous beasts and automatons to delight the masses of the souk and grace the gardens of the Sultan. Deeper still, in the darkest and most secret reaches of the alchemy complex, past the seven hidden gates of actuality, are the sanctums where the art and science of Taquin is honed to its most keen and deadly purpose. Here, they make the dreaded Lions of Jaber. Named after the deadly hunters of the plains, the Lions of Jaber can take many forms, not all of them leonine. Each one is a unique masterwork, and they are grown according to the skills and artistry of the Jaberian scientist that created them. The esoteric arts the Alchemagi employ are learned through study of forbidden books of Solomon, and many alchemists are killed when their experiments fail or run amok. However, the Lions are in desperate demand by the army of the Sultanate, so the program continues, regardless of cost or casualties. Creating the Lions of Jaber is extremely difficult, and there are endless variables to consider. Because of this, the lines are often malformed in some way. Though still magnificent hunters in war, their malformations often cause their existence to be one of constant physical pain and suffering. The truly tragic cases are the lions created with human-like intelligence, who are racked with existential dread as they realize the horror of their unnatural origins. In battle, the Lions of Jaber are deadly threats and are used as a vanguard of the host of the Sultanate. The Sultan himself has a hunting pack of 77 enormous Lions of Jaber that guard him day and night and accompany him on the battlefield. The speed and the ferocity of the lions is nearly unmatched, and some even have strange powers granted by their alchemical birth. Many have armor melded with the flesh and fashioned from alchemical metals, etched with cryptic seals and sigils, and richly embellished by the alchemists to hide the defects in their creations. The alchemists are the battlefield mystics and artificers of the great Sultanate of the Iron Wall. Schooled in the hidden knowledge of the legendary Smaragdine tablet within the House of Wisdom, admission is open to any with will and intellect deemed sufficient, be they man or woman. To become an alchemist is no easy task. They undergo many trials on their path to mastery. First are the countless lessons of the newly initiated, studying Jaberian corpus, translating the keys of Solomon, and learning all the fundamental disciplines of their primeval science. Only after 7 years of study under the watchful and exacting eyes of the High Alchemagi, is an aspirant allowed to attempt the three trials required for full membership in the Order? The first trial is to create a suit of alchemist's armor, which protects against harm. This is an essential tool of their craft, festooned with the seals of Solomon, which enables them to bend the elements of creation to their will, and shields them even from the devices of hell. Next, they must create a Taquin servant, a homunculus creature of artificial life and intellect. If the candidate manages to follow the complex formula, as well as the intricate timing and temperature requirements, the creature will emerge after 40 days of toil. It will act as the alchemist's living tool of creation, for their hands have fine motor skills, well beyond even the nimblest craftsman. Vaguely shaped like a small human, it can change the consistency of its body to an almost liquid-like slime to squeeze into alchemical chambers to do their master's bidding in extreme temperatures and in the fog of poisonous chemical fumes. Many aspirants fail here, and their creation emerges from its golden celestial sphere a deformed monstrosity, filled with hatred towards its creator. It burrows itself into the alchemist's body to consume it from within, wearing its would-be master as a skin. The third and final test is opening their third eye, the key to cosmic illumination, which allows them to see the building blocks of creation, and thus be able to ensure that the elements they use are in perfect balance. Those that fail their final test are horribly changed. Their third eye swells to nightmare proportions and melds with their original pair, driving the aspirant mad during the process of their deformation. They spend the rest of their pitiful lives screaming of the unseen horrors all around now revealed to them. Out of mercy, alchemists that fail in this way are often put down. But there are rumors of cabals of these living failures kept alive for reasons unknown. An alchemist that has passed all three trials is formidable indeed, a master of esoteric powers, able to control fire and ice, metal and liquid, capable of creating intricate mechanical devices and artificial life, as well as weapons of calamitous potency. In exchange for the freedom to practice their arts, the alchemists supply the Sultanate with the peerless Jabirian battle lions, and serve on the front lines where their devastating alchemical compounds melt the flesh from the bones of enemies of the believers, dissolving through even the toughest armor. They go by many names: ghost wolves, the secret knives, subtle vipers, the Sultan's wrath. Whatever they are called, assassins of the Sultanate instill terror in the hearts of even the most dauntless. Assassins are a legendary order of mystic warriors, notorious the world over for their esoteric arts and ruthlessness. Atop a forbidding mountain broods the Onyx Fortress, Alamut the Unconquerable. Behind its shadowed walls, great secrets are hoarded by the ancient Magi. Some say that the founder of the Order of Assassins, Rashid Ad-Din Sinan, best known as the Old Man of the Mountain, still holds his court here. A preposterous rumor, naturally, since that would make him close to 8 centuries old. Though the Ismaili sect of assassins is seen as heretical by many within the lands of the Iron Wall, a pact forged between Sultan and the Mountain ensures that the war bands of the believers often include one of the supreme killers in their service. Assassins are able to bend space and time using sacred rituals and powerful hallucinogenics discovered by magi of the Order. With this esoteric power, they prowl behind enemy lines, hunting their targets with merciless efficiency. They can seemingly appear in 2 places at once, strike an enemy with startling speed, and then travel back in time to a moment a few heartbeats before, safe from any retaliation. They do this in service of their Sultan, whose enemies they are charged to destroy in a form of ritual holy murder. To carry out this task, the assassins are painfully altered by many powerful unguents, chemicals, and potions. They stand much taller than a normal man, and are many times as fast and strong. Though adept with all manner of weapons, assassins favor the poisoned blades forged in the unknown depths of Alamut. These weapons are imbued with the supreme poison, the Milk of Manat, also known as the Cup of Death. A simple touch of these blades upon unprotected flesh is certain death, as the body of the victim turns black and rots from within over the course of several excruciating seconds. In chthonic chambers, deep below the surface, generations of young assassins are raised, where they are fed an awful, bitter diet rich with strange toxins. Generation by generation, their tolerance grows, until the blood of these willing vessels is drawn and then smelted into poisonous iron. The iron is forged into wicked, curving blades, and deadly spells of slaying are layered into each fold of the toxic metal. Finally, the red-hot blades are quenched in the venom of the pale, unnatural offspring of a basilisk and manticore. Thus, the blood of the first generations of assassins still lives to this day, growing more potent with each generation. The lands of the Sultanate are vast, and many armies can be raised from the multitude of the provinces, where one household in 20 is required to arm and equip a soldier to serve the ruler of those who believe. Most such soldiers are known as Azebs, meaning unmarried, as those with families cannot become Azebs, who serve as the light infantry on both land and sea, as well as guarding the great Iron Wall against the heretic assaults. When an elite force is sent beyond the wall to strike at the enemy or look for holy artifacts, the recruiters of the Sultan call for volunteers to join the leaders of such expeditions. Though the missions into No Man's Land are dangerous, there are always plenty of Azeb who step forward. There is fame to be won, and chance aplenty to acquire valuable loot. Weaponry of the Azebs varies a great deal, as they do not have access to the superb arms, armor, and alchemical marvels the elite household troops of the Sultan, such as janissaries and cataphracts do. Most carry jezails, with a distinctive curved stock. These are handmade weapons, and consequently they vary wildly in their construction. Jezails are very personal weapons, well-crafted, and their distinct curved stocks are intricately decorated. These long arms can be loaded with all manner of ammunition, fired roughened bullets, long iron nails, or even alchemically treated slivers of the Great Iron Wall. This makes jezails highly adaptable and less dependent on easily depleted ammo. Other weapons and equipment include curved daggers and scimitars, pistols and sappers equipment. Armor is rare. Azebs are often used by their superiors as light skirmishers to harass and tie down the enemies, while the heavier troops close in for the kill. Their superiors see little reason to waste expensive armor and troops that fall in great numbers and are easily replaceable. Paradise awaits for those who die for their faith, after all. Many Azebs meet a terrible end in the cruel wars in the trenches, and others return broken in mind and body. But there are always new, hot-blooded recruits willing to risk it all for the Sultan. A chance to kill the hated followers of Shaitan and return home as heroes with fabulous stories and glittering gold. Military expeditions over the Great Iron Wall into No Man's Land carry many risks, and their commanders are field officers known as Ubossi. They are expected to lead from the front, and their selection is solely on merit, with no consideration given to family pedigree or wealth. Many are promoted from the ranks of the Janissary Corps. Their bodies are enhanced by the Jaberian alchemical arts, and their minds conditioned by the mystics, allowing them to face any foe unflinchingly. The downside of the mystical mental hardening is their utter disregard for pain and their cold ruthlessness on the battlefield. Casualties, both their own and those of the enemy, as well as those of non-combatants who believe, are purely utilitarian to the Ubossi. For is it not just to send heretics to Jahannam, while the warriors who fall in battle will wake in paradise, as has been promised? Under the orders of a powerful pasha or emir, or even the Sultan himself, the Ubossi assumes the command of an elite squad of warriors to fulfill their task, such as to reclaim holy artifacts lost during the catastrophic period when heretics took the Levant by storm. Other times, they are told to find and eliminate powerful foes, such as heretic nobles who were once subjects of the Sultan, but have turned their backs to Allah. Ubossi are equipped with superb armor of meteoric iron, the finest carbines gilded with silver and loaded with alchemical shot, and carry Kalijji swords of the past heroes of the Sultanate, where great deeds of old are inscribed with golden calligraphy. If they serve the Sublime Gate well, their name and glory will be etched on the blade as well to inspire future generations. The strongest carry the dreaded hand cannons, which double as deadly halberds. If they are hunters of distinction, They wear pelts of their greatest kills, such as chimeras, as cloaks, which offer protection from the powers of Shaitan. Success brings Ubasi the favor of the Sultan, and along with it, honor. Splendid weaponry of Damascus steel, gold dinars aplenty, and access to the wondrous devices and creatures created by the Jabirian alchemists of the House of Wisdom. Hunting is a noble pursuit within the ranks of the officer corps, and artificial birds of prey and automaton hounds double as potent weapons of war and are brought along to the front to aid their masters at war. Due to the protection afforded by the Iron Wall, the Sultanate has always maintained excellence in artillery. However, the siege guns and heavy mortars that defend those who believe on the ramparts of the wall are far too cumbersome for small expeditionary forces. Thus, in the year of the Hiraj 821, Sultan Bayezid III commissioned a new creature of war to act as living field artillery. To fulfill this decree, the Jabirian scientists of the Royal Artillery House have labored for centuries to perfect the divine arts of Taquin. In their secret laboratories, they performed countless experiments, learning many precious and costly lessons in the process. They have devised many things, but none more clever or ingenious than the brazen bull, called Boga by the soldiery of the Sultanate. The brazen bull is a monstrous being of immense power and vitality, capable of tearing even the bastard child of a devil clean in half. The Sultan's armorers equip the bulls with heavy artillery that even the superhuman janissaries cannot lift, let alone use in battle. Flame cannons, volley guns, and holy blades blessed by the word of the Great Protector. Encasing its mighty frame is exquisitely decorated bronze armor of thrice hardened scales, covered in talismans of protection and the grace of the Creator. On the battlefields beyond the Iron Wall, the brazen bull is an awesome and terrifying sight. It is a single-minded, fearless walking bulwark, a tower and shield which the war parties of the Sultanate rally behind. Such is the power of their weapons that the very earth shakes with their pounding, disrupting the enemy advance even when they fail to slay their target. Alamut, the Unconquered, also known as the Eagle's Nest, is the chief stronghold of the Nizari Ismaili sect, that who still holds sway over their ancient lands near Ba-Khazar, the body of water that Franks call the Caspian Sea, as it has been for over 800 years. This mountain fortress houses the Dread Order of Assassins. No deadlier killers walk this world, raised from childhood in the lethal and esoteric arts that bend time and space in service of their mystic and murderous craft. Many learned scholars of the Iron Sultanate's ulema claim that Alamut was left outside of the Great Iron Wall as a mark of Allah's disfavor for their Zandaka, their heretical religious views on religion. The mystics of the Assassins sneer at this suggestion and maintain that the ever-preserving knew his children at Alamut would need no such protection, their own bravery would suffice. Though largely closed to outsiders, there are times when the Old Man of the Mountain requires the services of outsiders or wishes to seek counsel from a sage of great wisdom in person. Such individuals awaken to find summons placed by their bedside, delivered by unseen hands as they slumber. Summoned to the capital of Dalam, as the assassins call Alamut, few dare to refuse such an invitation. At the mouth of the valley, they are met by the servants of the Order, who blindfold them to ensure they cannot learn the hidden paths to the home of the eagles. Such visitors tell of heavenly gardens, libraries that rival those of the House of Wisdom, and laboratories where philosophers, scientists, theologians, and sages of the Dervish Ismaili order debate a multitude of matters. Very few will speak of their audience with the Master of the Knives himself, the Old Man of the Mountain, for fear of insulting their dread host. Of those brave enough to reveal details of their encounter, some describe being greeted by a youth full of vigor, an athlete and a warrior at the prime of his life, wearing a shining white cloak. Others, however, describe an ancient man with a long silver beard, stern and whip-lean, dressed in black, adorned with tiras in the color of blood. Whether a result of a clever disguise or the mystic arts, no two descriptions of the countenance of the Lord of Alamut match each other. All accounts agree on one detail: a simple ring, bearing a seal engraved with the symbol of the Holy King, who the Franks call Solomon the Wise, rests upon a chain around the neck of the Lord of Alamut. Rumors abound that this is the first and true seal given by Allah to the mighty king, giving him the power to command spirits such as Shayati and the Jinn. It is speculated it is the power of the seal that has kept Alamut safe all these years, despite Hell's forces holding the land surrounding Alamut and its hinterlands. Whatever the truth of the matter, no warband of the Court of the Seven-Headed Serpent has ever approached the citadel of Alamut. Beelzebub's unclean Order of the Fly recoils from the assassin's hinterlands, and no outbreak of the Black Grail has ever been reported within their domain. It seems that Hell's otherworldly powers are held at bay by some kind of protection capable of countering their Godic magic. Thus, the mission to conquer Alamut has fallen upon the mortal followers of Jahannam. Abaddon, the great prince of wrath, has promised a reward of eternal youth to any heretic warlord who captures the eagle's nest. Despite the overwhelming numbers of the forces of the heretic legions, all who have attempted to take the fortress thus far have failed. Many attempts to invade are thwarted in their earliest moments, as great heretic lords die in their tents to an assassin's daggers, or through poison in their meals. Others disappear without a trace, their painstakingly built alliances falling apart like chaff in the wind. Scarcely a decade passes without Alamut being assaulted, for there is no lack of ambitious heretic warlords. But the forces of Shaitan that have laid siege to its onyx walls have discovered that the fortress is all but invincible. The Alamut Valley, known as the Shirku, is bordered to the east by the Alamku mountain range. The Throne of Solomon and its entrance is a narrow pass, shielded by sharp cliffs and guarded by mystic standing stones. Besides this, the raging waters of the river, Alamut, make this entrance inaccessible for many months each year. Flanked by the Iron Wall to the east and west, any forces approaching come under a barrage of long-range artillery from its garrison, who gleefully exact a heavy toll on any would-be invaders. In the skies above, the airspace is protected and patrolled by the Sultan's flying ships of war, making aerial assaults impossible. Though no official documentation or declaration exists, the strategists of New Antioch widely believe that the Sultanate's indirect protection of the Alamut is granted in exchange for the services of the assassins. Alamut's natural and military defenses are not its only safeguard. Heretic long-range artillery finds its shells striking the surrounding mountains, never the fortress itself. No matter how carefully the distances are measured, or what dark prayers are offered to patron demons, assault forces lose their way, even when guided by infernal compasses and maps. Time itself flows in strange fashion here, and invaders find that each step robs their youth and vitality, causing them to succumb to the infirmity of old age long before reaching the walls of Alamut. Their spent and withered bodies fall to join other unsuccessful invaders scattered across the land of the assassins, as their souls succumb to their doom in flames. Even to behold the fortress is a trial, its stones vanishing against the sky, eluding the eye and confounding the mind. Those who have tried to assault Alamut and have lived to tell the tale recall a powerful aura of forbidding menace surrounding the home of the eagles. Even the most devout and bloodthirsty heretic general sworn to serve the Serpent Head of Wrath may think twice before challenging the assassins. And so, Alamut endures, unconquered and unbowed. Anchored by the Taurus Mountains to the north and Zagros Mountains in the east, the two horns of the crescent moon, the invincible iron wall of Du'a-Quanon, is both the symbol of the Sultanate and the very reason for its existence. Beyond it lies the last and the greatest realm of those who believe, easily eclipsing all other known wonders of the world. None who have seen the Iron Wall can ever forget it. Despite centuries of artillery bombardment by heretic cannons, its surface is untarnished, glittering like a newly cast steel plating in the morning sun. And at night, the manifold gemstones embedded into its very structure light up in a wondrous show of color and artistry. Neither the wall itself nor its gates have ever been brought down. And while some enemies have made it across the wall to spread death and terror deep into the Sultanate proper, they have always been thrown back. The wall remains warm to the touch, for scorching magma still courses within. On the exceedingly rare instances when a terrifying weapon of hell has managed to crack its surface, the outpouring of molten metal within has brought a swift death to the invaders, and the rapidly cooling lava is then hardened to reform the wall. At regular intervals stand towers and bulwarks erected by the sultans of both past and present, specifically constructed to support the long-range artillery of the Imperial School of Military Engineering. The great spires act as both lookouts as well as minarets for calling the believers to Salah 5 times a day. These constructions, mighty as they may be, are not nearly as durable as the invincible Iron Wall. They are often under repairs or being rebuilt due to the horrendous damage heretic artillery and long-range bombers inflict upon them. There are 4 great gates, as well as many lesser ones, roughly corresponding to the 4 cardinal directions. Each holds a great garrison commanded by a Lord of the Standard, responsible for the security and protection of the trade routes beyond. Despite their formidable constructions, the Sultan's pashas know that if one of the 4 gates was ever taken, the Sultanate would be in mortal peril. Thus, it is not just Janissaries and a host of Azebs and Sappers that guard the great gates, but instead, each entrance is also guarded by 2 Taquin creatures of truly colossal proportions. Winged beasts with eyes keener than those of any hawk and claws that can tear a heretic tank in half with a single swipe. Their form was chosen in honor of the legendary Barak that once carried the Prophet. They are not only there to protect the gates with physical force, but also with their wit. Created with keen intellect, the Barak Taquin tests the travelers to the Sultanate with subtle but deeply sagacious, perspicacious questions and riddles, exposing heretic infiltrators and weeding out those who would bring harm to the believers. Due to their intelligence, the Taquin Guardians are well aware of the artificial nature of their being, suffering from the knowledge of their unnatural existence. It is said that they are created as pairs, not only for their might, but also that they could give solace to each other with deep philosophical discussions and sophisticated poetry, alleviating the pain of their existential horror, for they were created by a man and not by God, and thus can hold no hope of salvation. When there are no passers-by traveling through the gate, their low, rumbling voices echo across the wall as they debate the meaning of the 99 names of Allah, the nature of love, or past battles they have engaged in the many years of their existence. Creation and maintenance of even one of these mighty beasts cost the Sultan the yearly income of an entire Nahilah, and occupies the finest cadre of the alchemists of the House of Wisdom for a better part of 7 years. It is a price the Sultan is glad to pay for the protection of his people. The bountiful blessings of the Iron Wall are not limited to mere physical protection from the forces of Shaitan. The scholars of the House of Wisdom have labored for decades to create machines to help maintain and regulate the precipitation within the lands of the believers, as well as making Sultanate airspace exceedingly hard for heretic aerial forces to harry, due to the high winds that often whip above the spires of the Iron Wall. Here, wondrous devices trap the passing gales and storms, using them to guard their airspace against hellbombers and long-range reconnaissance planes.